They were waiting for us, Garth. We got the signal to come in, but the bastards were still waiting for us.
You ain't telling me anything I don't already know. And you all should have known there was a chance of that happening since we heard those shots beforehand. Somebody caught our boys after they got rid of the lookouts that old desert rat told us about.
The Reverend should have known that.
The man named Jeffries was more educated than most of the gang, but just as ruthless.
We never should have attacked the town.
Don't you say nothing bad about the Reverend. He's made us all rich men.
The members of the gang had scattered as they fled from Arrowhead, rendezvousing in the hills where their last camp had been, according to the plan laid out by Shade before the attack. Shade didn't like the idea of acknowledging the possibility of defeat, but he was too smart not to plan for it in case it happened. However, this was the first time one of their raids had not gone exactly the way Shade had told them it would. The men were upset because some of their fellow outlaws had been killed and their leader had been captured. Garth himself had seen Shade being disarmed and knocked out, but hadn't been able to get to him because of the heavy gunfire from the townspeople. He assumed that by now they had locked Shade up in the local jail, but he didn't know that for sure. He was confident that Shade was still alive, though. He couldn't bring himself to believe that the Reverend would come to such an ignominious end as to be killed by a bunch of pathetic townies.
The question is now, what are we going to do about this, Garth? Those yokels are liable to try and lynch the boss.
And they got to pay for what they did to us.
I know.
Garth didn't like having to do a lot of thinking, which was the main reason he had started riding with Joshua Shade in the first place. Over time, he had risen to the position of Shade's segundo because he was tough and trustworthy, not because he was all that smart. Now the rest of the men were looking to him to figure out their course of action, and it was an uncomfortable feeling. He took orders well, and he could give them, too, when somebody else came up with them. He could ride all day and all night when he had to, and he didn't mind killing without mercy. But he wasn't a leader. Not by choice, anyway.
Well, how about it?
Garth knew what Jeffries was thinking. Jeffries sensed an opening. He thought he should be in charge now that Shade was a prisoner down in that backwater cowtown.
They're ready for us down there. We go charging back in tonight, they'll cut us to ribbons. We gotta wait. Bide our time and see what's gonna happen.
Do you mean leave the Reverend a prisoner? Oh, I don't like that, Garth.
I don't like it either. But we don't have much choice. We'll get him loose, but we gotta wait until the time is right.
And how are we gonna know that?
I wish the boss hadn't killed that old prospector. Could have sent him back in to spy for us like he did before.
Maybe what we need to do is find another spy.
Where are we gonna do that?
There are ranchers around here. Find a small one where it's just a man and his family, maybe a hand or two, and take it over. A man will do whatever you tell him to do when it's a matter of protecting his wife and kids.
All right, that's what we'll do. Half a dozen men ought to be plenty. The rest of you stay here and patch up any wounds you got during that ruckus in town.
Jeffries and Gonzalez volunteered to go with Garth, who quickly picked out three other men to accompany them. The six of them mounted up and rode off into the night.
I don't like the way you said the Reverend made a mistake by killing that old man. He thought he was doing the right thing.
I didn't see any reason not to kill that desert rat either, at the time. Just goes to show you that nobody can think of everything, at least not all the time.
The Reverend can.
The dog's barking woke Tom Peterson. His wife slept quietly next to him.
Well, I'd better get up and check.
Tom moved away from his wife and swung his legs out of bed. Wearing long underwear, he stood up and moved across the darkened room to twitch aside the curtains over the window. Franny was mighty proud of those curtains, having bought the material for them at one of the mercantiles in Arrowhead. A lantern was burning in the little shed next to the barn where Felipe slept. The old vaquero was the only hand Tom had hired. He and Felipe took care of things around the spread by themselves, helped a little by Tom's boys, who were 11 and 8 and turning into pretty fair hands themselves. Felipe would see what had the dog so stirred up, Tom told himself. He turned to go back to bed.
What?
Frowning, Tom swung toward the door instead of the bed. No matter how much he wanted to, he couldn't ignore the fact that something was going on. He took down the Henry rifle from the pegs beside the door.
Felipe!
He rushed outside, holding the gun ready. Something cracked across his ankles. The impact as he hit the ground jolted the Henry out of his hands. He reached for it, only to have a boot come down hard on his finger.
Tom? Tom, what's going on out there?
Tom wanted to call out and warn his wife, but someone grabbed him by the hair, jerked his head up, and pressed the keen blade of a knife against his throat.
Not a sound, senor.
No! Get away from me!
Tom felt a warm trickle of blood down his neck and knew that the least bit more pressure would send the blade slicing deeply into his flesh.
Get him up!
The knife remained at his throat as he climbed to his feet. To his horror, he saw his wife in the moonlight with a man standing behind her, one arm around her throat, and the other hand holding a gun to her head.
Do what we tell you, hombre, and nobody will get hurt. But if you give us any trouble, we'll just kill everybody on this spread and move on.
But not before we have some fun with this pretty little wife of yours.
Tom's eyes gazed around wildly. He saw several other shapes emerge from the darkness. He was surrounded, helpless, not only because he was outnumbered, but because these strangers were threatening Franny.
You savvy what we're saying?
Yeah, savvy. You just tell me what you want, mister. I'll do anything. Just don't hurt my family.
You're smart, hombre. Now listen close.
A door at the far end of the corridor in the cell block led to the room that Sheriff Cyrus Flagg called home. He had a folding cot, though, that he carried into the office and set up for the Blood Brothers.
One of you fellas can get a little sleep while the other one stands watch. I'll take my turn, too.
It's after midnight, and not that long until morning. Why don't you go ahead and get some rest, Sheriff? Let Matt and me worry about watching the jail until morning.
You sure?
Sheriff, we're sure.
You all right, then. Back the I can't tell you boys how much I appreciate your help.
Cometh to smite thee and your foul
Keep
heels.
It up, Shade. I might just toss the keys out the front door and let the folks in town do whatever they want to you.
Sinners! Filthy sinners!
Flagg shook his head and walked on back to his quarters, closing the door firmly behind him. Matt closed the cell block door.
What was the idea of volunteering us to stay up the rest of the night?
The sheriff's a lot older than we are. I'm sure he needs to sleep more than we do.
I wouldn't be so sure of that.
But there's nothing we can do about it now.
You can take the first watch, though.
Fine.
Sam went behind the desk and sat down, while Matt pulled his boots and gun belts off and stretched out on the cot. He placed the shotgun on the floor within easy reach. When he woke up, sunlight was slanting through the front window of the sheriff's office. Matt sat up abruptly.
Hey, what the hell? How come you didn't wake me up for my turn-on watch?
I wasn't all that sleepy, so I didn't see any point in it. After the way you complained last night, I didn't want you being too tired and cranky this morning.
Cranky? Why, I'll cranky you, you...
Heathens, I say! Heathens! Down will his mightiness cast ye into the pits of hell!
Shut up in there!
The word of God will not be silenced!
Flagg came into the office a few minutes later. The sheriff wore his overalls again and looked more like a farmer than a peace officer.
Morning, fellas. I reckon the rest of the night was quiet.
It was. I heard a little loud talking from the street a few times, but no one tried to get in. We had the shutters closed most of the night, but we figured it was all right to open them this morning.
Sure enough. I'll get down to the hash house and see about getting some breakfast sent up for the two of you. And for Shade, too, I reckon. Although I hate to waste good food on a varmint like that. Wouldn't be right to let a prisoner starve, though.
Yeah, I suppose not.
I'll see about getting a message sent off to the court in Tucson, too.
Flagg left and came back a short time later with a cloth-covered tray containing platters of flapjacks, biscuits, and thick slices of ham. Matt had coffee boiling in the dented old pot on the stove by then.
I did some asking around town while I was out. Nobody talking about Lynch and Shade.
At least not that they would admit to the sheriff.
Yeah, well, there's that. I got pretty good instincts, though. I don't think anything's going on right now.
Bet you believe it'll build back up.
I do. There's going to be a big funeral here in town this afternoon for Charlie Cornwell, Harlan Eggleston, Yancey Baker, Bob McCall, and Rufus Nicholson. Those are all the fellas killed by those outlaws. Every time one of those boys is buried, folks are going to look at each other and ask themselves why Joshua Shade is still drawing breath when he ought to be dangling at the end of a rope. They won't be able to come up with a good answer for that question either, except that it's the law, and after a while, they just won't give a damn.
That afternoon, Sheriff Flagg attended the mass funeral in the church at the edge of town while Matt and Sam remained at the jail. Later, when the last coffin had been lowered into the newly dug graves in Arrowhead Cemetery, and while the undertaker and his helpers were busy shoveling dirt into the holes, Flagg returned to the sheriff's office. He still wore the dusty, somewhat threadbare black suit he had worn to the funeral, with a gun belt strapped around his ample belly under the frock coat.
She's quiet for a change.
Yes, he's been quiet all afternoon.
Reckon he finally wore himself out from all that carrying on. Any problems at the funeral or the burying?
Not really. But I can tell the folks are mighty upset. Stan Hightower and all his hands were there, and Stan's wife Marjorie never stopped crying. I didn't like the look on Stan's face.
We don't know who those people are, Sheriff.
Oh, yeah. Marjorie's Rufus Nicholson's daughter, and her husband Stan owns the Diamond H, one of the biggest spreads in these parts. So Stan's pretty much used to getting whatever he wants around here.
Well, that sounds like trouble brewing.
Yeah. I heard Stan talking after the service at the cemetery about how it's a waste of time waiting for a judge to come all the way from Tucson. He said, why bother with a trial when Shade's just gonna hang anyway?
And I'll bet people listened to him, didn't they?
Like I told you, Stan's one of the big skookum he-wolves around here. Folks want to stay on his good side. And if he rides into town with a dozen tough, gun-hung cowboys right behind him, ready to back his play, some of the good citizens of Arrowhead will find it mighty easy to fall in with him.
When do you think this is liable to happen?
Well, wouldn't surprise me if it was tonight.
We'll just have to put a stop to it, then.
You're talking 3 men against 40 or 50.
I'll admit, those aren't very good odds. But we have the law on our side.
Well, that won't stop a bullet. Not unless you got a big, thick law book stuck in your pocket. Cyrus, you can always just step aside and let him have Shade.
Yeah, but let me ask you something, Bodine. If you'd done swore an oath to uphold the law, would you step aside?
Well, the things that Shade has done, I might, yeah.
No, you wouldn't. I know you, Matt. You're too stubborn to ever do anything like that.
Well, you're probably right about that. But we didn't swear an oath now, did we?
We told the sheriff we'd help him. That's giving our word. It's the same thing.
Ah, damn it, Sam. I hate it when you're right. We'll stick, Sheriff.
Nobody'd think any less of you if you didn't.
We would.
We'll stick.
The settlement had been so crowded because of the mass funeral held that afternoon that no one had paid any attention to Tom Peterson as he mingled with the townspeople and talked to everyone he could. Most of the folks in Arrowhead knew Tom, so they didn't think anything of it when he asked about what was going to happen to the notorious prisoner who was locked up in the town jail. Now, as he rode back toward his hardscrabble ranch, fear filled Tom. Franny and the boys and little 7-year-old Abigail had been out there at the ranch alone with those outlaws all day, and there was no telling what might have happened while he was gone. Maybe nothing had happened. That man Garth seemed to be in charge of the gang, and he kept a pretty tight hand on the reins as far as Tom could see. He had told Tom all they wanted was to know everything he could find out about Joshua Shade. Since Tom had information to report, that gave him a shred of hope. But it wasn't good news he was going to give Garth, and that prospect worried him greatly. Everything looked peaceful as he came inside of the ranch. A tendril of smoke curled up from the stone chimney just as it normally would. The outlaws had put their horses in the barn the night before, so there was no sign of them. Tom rode to the house, reined his mount to a halt. Normally, he would have tended to his horse before doing anything else, but he was too anxious to do that. He dropped the reins and hurried to the door. A cold ring of metal was pressed to the side of his head, just in front of his right ear.
Take it easy, sodbuster!
Jeffries was the one Tom feared the most, since he'd made no secret of how he felt about Franny, practically licking his chops every time he looked at her.
If anybody happens to be watching, we don't want you acting like anything's wrong.
Sorry.
Tom's eyes were adjusting to the dimness inside the house now, and to his huge relief, he saw Franny, Abigail, and the boys all sitting at the table, apparently unharmed. Wide-eyed with fear, but not hurt. The 6 outlaws stood or sat around the room. Jeffries, Garth, and the Mexican Gonzalez had their guns drawn. Garth pouched his weapon, though, and motioned for the others to do the same.
What about it? Is Joshua still alive?
He's alive. Sheriff Flagg's got him locked up just like you thought.
What are they gonna do with him?
The sheriff sent word to Tucson about what happened and asked for a judge to come out so they can put your boss on trial.
When's that supposed to happen?
Well, it's hard to say for sure. Whenever the judge gets there. A week or thereabouts from what I heard. Maybe a little less.
Bueno. That gives us time to get the Reverend out of there.
Tom grimaced, and Garth noticed the reaction.
What?
I don't know if you're going to be able to bust Jade out of there. The whole town's worked up over the men who got killed last night, and every able-bodied man is walking around with a gun. The sheriff's got lookouts on top of the hotel and the bank again.
That didn't do much good last time, now did it?
Well, everybody's more alert now. Plus, Sheriff Flagg's got a couple of gunfighters helping him out. They're holed up inside the jail with the prisoner.
Gunfighters? What gunfighters?
Matt Bodine and that half-breed sidekick of his, Two Wolves.
Bodine and Two Wolves.
Who are they? I never heard of them.
Bodine's a slick iron artist. Supposed to be damn near as fast on the draw as Smoke Jensen. And Two Wolves is right behind them. They're a pair of first-class fighting men, that's for sure.
Two men against all of us. With odds like that, it don't matter how good they are.
Yeah, you can say that all you want, but nobody's gonna want to be among the dozen or more of us they'd kill before they went under. I'm gonna have to do some thinking about this.
That's not all. A lynch mob tried to take Shade out of the jail last night.
Yeah, it don't surprise me none. What happened?
Well, Sheriff talked him out of it, and I don't reckon anybody wanted to try Bodine and Two Wolves either. But there's a rancher named Hightower who won't be turned away so easy. His father-in-law was one of the men who was killed, and from what I heard in town, Hightower wants to settle the score for the old man.
Can he do it?
He's got a tough crew, and the townspeople are liable to throw in with him. They'll have a better chance of getting the Shade than you fellas would.
Only they want to string him up, not bust him out of jail.
Yeah, that's exactly what they want.
Maybe we ought to let this Hightower hombre do the work for us.
What you talking about, Garth? We can't let no lynch mob have the Reverend.
We can let them do the busting him out of jail, though. Then before they have a chance to lynch him, we swoop in and snatch him away from them. Nobody will be expecting us to strike right then.
That might actually work.
Yeah, once it's dark, we can make our way along the bed of the river that loops around the town. That way we can get close enough to keep an eye on what's going on without anybody spotting us.
Garth looked around as if waiting for someone to argue with him or point out the flaws in his plan, but Jeffries, Gonzalez, and the other three outlaws remained silent.
All right, then. That's what we'll do. We best get on back to the rest of the boys and let them know the plan.
What about the sodbuster here? We can't let him ride into town and warn everybody what we're going to do.
No, of course not.
Tom lunged toward Jeffries and reached out in a desperate attempt to snatch the man's gun from its holster.
Good idea, Gonzalez. We'll use knives on him. Quieter that way.
Shade hadn't eaten the breakfast that Flagg had brought him that morning, nor had he touched the food on the tray the sheriff carried into the cell at midday. Both times, Matt and Sam had stood just outside the cell door with rifles trained on the prisoner as Flagg took the food inside. Soon, it came time for supper.
Damned if I'm going to waste more of the town's money on feeding that vicious son of a bitch when he don't eat none of what I bring him.
There's food in there if he wants it bad enough.
I'll stay here for a while. Why don't you boys go get something to eat? I'm sure you wouldn't mind being out of this place for a while.
The Blood Brothers looked at each other.
Yeah, might as well. We can get back here in a hurry if there's any trouble.
That's right. If you hear a scatter gun go off, though, I'd be obliged if you'd come a-running.
Yeah, I could use a cold beer, too. And I bet that girl Amelia at the 10 Grand would be mighty pleased to see you again, Sam.
I think we should just get the beer and then something to eat.
Yeah, well, whatever you say.
Archie Cochran was behind the bar again when they entered the 10 Grand this evening. He lifted a hand in greeting and started drawing two beers without being asked as Matt and Sam headed for the bar. Archie set the foaming mugs in front of them.
On the house, boys. After what you did last night, I'm not sure your money's good here anymore.
Is that your decision to make?
I own the place, so it damn well better be.
Oh, we're much obliged.
Nothing's too good for the men who captured Joshua Shade. Of course, some folks in town aren't too happy with you boys. They figure Shade would be rotting on the end of a rope by now if it wasn't for you backing up Sheriff Flagg.
No one has the right to take the law into their own hands.
Maybe not under normal circumstances. But I reckon most folks feel like these ain't normal circumstances. A lot of people are grieving tonight.
Like Stan Hightower?
You didn't hear it from me, but I've got a pretty good idea that Stan's not going to wait for the judge to get here. I don't want to see Osiris get hurt. What he ought to do, what you boys ought to do too, if you're still helping him out, is take a ride out of town for an hour or so this evening. It'll all be over by the time you got back.
We can't do that, Archie. Neither can the sheriff.
Yeah, I figured as much. But I didn't think it hurt anything to mention it.
Matt and Sam finished their beers, then left the saloon. They walked down the street to the hash house where Sheriff Flagg had been getting their meals. The food had been good so far, so they didn't see any reason to change horses in midstream. They were polishing off platters of thick steaks and mounds of German potatoes.
I don't reckon we ought to wait for a sound of a shotgun blast, do you?
Not hardly. Let's go.
Matt dropped a greenback on the table to pay for their meals, and they headed for the door. As they emerged from the cafe, they looked toward the sheriff's office and saw that the riders had reined to a halt in front of the blocky stone building. One man edged his horse to the forefront of the group.
Open up in there, Sheriff. Nobody has to get hurt here.
Quite a few townspeople had heard the commotion and were now heading toward the jail. Most of them were grim-faced men who carried rifles or shotguns, Matt and Sam noted. They exchanged worried glances. The situation was developing just as Sheriff Flagg and Archie Cochran had predicted it would. The members of the lynch mob that had been turned back the night before were ready to join Stan Hightower and his men for another stab at hanging Joshua Shade.
We should have brought those greeners with us.
We'll have to make do with what we have.
As they got closer, they saw that the men who had ridden into town with Stan Hightower were all tough, competent-looking hombres. They bristled with hardware, too. Each man was armed with a rifle and at least one handgun.
Damn it, Cyrus! Open up! Don't make us bust in there!
The inside shutters had been closed over the windows, Matt noted, as he and Sam drew closer. Now one of the shutters was pulled back a little, and the barrel of a rifle thrust through the opening.
Go home, Stan. You know good and well I can't let you have Shade.
He doesn't deserve to have a good man like you protecting him.
Maybe not, but he's my prisoner, and I ain't letting anything happen to him. You and your boys just turn around and go home. Marjorie's already grieving. You don't want to make it worse on her.
I don't see how hanging that murdering bastard Shade could make it any worse on her.
Because she'll be a widow, too.
Hold on there, Cyrus. You and I have always been friends.
That was before you come stomping up to my door and told me to turn a prisoner over to you. I got this rifle pointed right at you, and the first man that takes a step toward this door, I'm pulling the trigger.
Don't let him talk to you like that, Stan. He wouldn't dare shoot you, and you know it.
Hold on now. Don't go doing anything foolish.
Shade killed your own wife's pa. You can't let him get away with that.
He won't get away with it. He'll hang. But it'll happen legal-like.
You can't stop us by yourself, Cyrus.
Matt nodded to Sam and shucked his irons. Beside him, Sam drew his Colt as well.
Oh, hell, it's Bodine and Two Wolves. They're behind us.
I got six in each wheel, gents, and so does Sam here. That's 18 shots. Tell me, which 18 of you want to die?
You can't kill a man with every shot.
Care to bet your life on that, amigo?
I've always heard that you two were law-abiding men. Why are you taking the side of a vicious murderer?
Because we are law-abiding men. We want to see Shade hang just as much as you do, Mr. Hightower. But you should leave it to the law to do it.
The law? You can't count on the law. Out here, the only real law is what a man carries on his hip.
I reckon that's always been true. But things have started to change. I don't like it all the time either. In the long run, though, there's nothing we can do about it because nothing stays the same forever.
You really think the law will take care of Joshua Shade?
I do.
I know Cyrus Flagg is an honest man, and I'll trust him and you boys for now. But the law had better do its job, or the rest of us will take care of it ourselves.
You mean there's not going to be a hanging?
Not tonight. We'll see about tomorrow or next week. Come on, boys. Diamond H, follow me.
The crowd began to disperse rapidly once Hightower and his punters had galloped off. Matt and Sam lowered their hammers on their guns, but didn't holster the weapons until everyone had drifted off to the saloons or their homes. The jail door swung open.
Get in here while you're getting good.
The Blood Brothers went into the jail.
How long do you reckon we can keep dodging this particular bullet?
Until the judge gets here, I hope. Once folks see that Shade's gonna get what's coming to him, I think all this lynch fever will settle down.
Yeah, well, I've got a hunch it's gonna be a long week.
In the deep gully cut by the San Francisco River, about a quarter of a mile from Arrowhead, Willard Garth lay still.
Damn it, when's the shooting gonna start?
Gonzalez looked at him.
There ain't gonna be no shooting. That mob of gutless gringos broke up and went home because they were afraid of Bodine and Two Wolves and the sheriff.
No lynching?
Nada.
Now what the hell are we gonna do? We're in the same situation we were in before. We can try to break Joshua out of that jail.
Get that gang shot to pieces in the process. I know, damn it, I know. We'll just have to wait for a better time.
And how will we know when that is? We can't just waltz into town and ask somebody what's going on.
We'll find somebody to spy for us.
Like we did before? Shit. Maybe we better stop killing our informants so quickly.
But the last ones died so good.
Don't worry none about that. Ain't never gonna be a shortage of folks to kill.
Despite Matt's ominous prediction, the next few days passed relatively peacefully in Arrowhead. There was still considerable muttering going on in the town about how Joshua Shade ought to be taken out and strung up, but without somebody powerful like Stan Hightower to back them up, the men who would have been eager to form a mob settled for grousing in their beer. The part-time deputy Flag had sent to Tucson arrived back in Arrowhead 5 days after he left, bringing good news with him.
The judge is about a day behind me.
Flag lowered his weary body into one of the chairs in the sheriff's office.
He'll be here sometime tomorrow, and he said he'd hold a trial right away. We'll have Shade strung up as soon as the trial's over, I'm betting. But at least it'll be legal.
Shade had quieted down considerably the past couple of days. He sat on the bunk in the cell, constantly muttering to himself. Matt and Sam didn't know if he was praying, calling down curses on his enemies, or just raving maniacally. But any time one of them stepped into the cell block, day or night, he could hear the soft voice from Shade's cell. The outlaw had started eating, too. The Blood Brothers supposed it was so he could keep his strength up for whatever he was doing in there.
I reckon you boys will be glad when this is all over and you can be on your way.
We were in no hurry to get anywhere.
Just drifting.
All four men in the office tensed at the sound, but they relaxed as they realized how unlikely it was that a lynch mob would knock so politely.
Who's there?
It's Matthew Wiley, Cyrus.
Oh, the mayor of Arrowhead. I wonder what he wants.
Only one way to find out.
Come on in, Mayor. What can we do for you?
Wiley was a thin, pale, fair-haired man in a brown tweed suit. Matt and Sam knew from talk they had heard that he owned the bank, which was not surprising, since political power always followed the money.
I saw Deputy Johnson ride past the bank.
Wiley nodded toward the man who had just returned from Tucson, whose name was Randy Johnson.
Does that mean the judge is on his way?
It does. With any luck, by the time the sun goes down tomorrow, this whole ugly business will be behind us.
Well, that's just it. The town council and I have been talking about it, and we're afraid that the trial won't bring an end to our problems.
You ain't afraid that Shade will be found not guilty, are you, Mayor? There's too many witnesses against him for that to ever happen.
Oh, no, it's not that. But what's going to happen after we've hanged him? What will his gang do then? Will they try to avenge him by attacking the town?
Matt had been leaning casually against the desk with his arms crossed over his chest. Now he straightened.
No offense, Mr. Mayor, but wait just a doggone minute. We had to stand up to a lynch mob twice, and now you're saying you don't want Shade to be hanged?
Now that's not what I'm saying at all. After what Shade and his gang did to our town, I'd like to see that son of a bitch dancing at the end of a rope as much as anybody would. But I'm not sure it would be the wisest thing for Arrowhead if it happens here.
Because you're afraid of his gang.
It's not just me. All the businessmen in town are worried, and with good reason.
You can't be suggesting that we just let him go.
No, not at all. We can go ahead and have the trial, find him guilty, and sentence him to hang. But I think the sentence ought to be carried out, you know, somewhere else.
Like where?
I don't know. Tucson, perhaps.
Oh, I don't know. I figured we'd just take care of things right here. I was about to go tell Cassius Doolittle to start hammering together a gallows.
Well, the town council and I just don't think it's wise.
Well, I reckon we'll have to wait and see what the judge says. If you can talk him into it, I'll go along with whatever he decides.
Well, thanks, Cyrus. That's all we're asking.
Wiley left the office, and Matt barred the door after him. He shook his head and looked disgusted as he turned back to the others.
You can't blame them for feeling that way. They're worried about their businesses, their homes, and their families. They've been through one attack by that bunch, and they don't want to have to go through another.
Well, I suppose. And in the end, it doesn't really matter where Shade gets hanged, as long as he winds up at the end of a rope.
You can count on that.
The next day dawned bright and hot. The air was so clear that Willard Garth had no trouble seeing with a naked eye what was going on in the town from the top of the hill where he had hunkered about a half a mile away. He used a spyglass anyway, just to give himself a better view. He was careful to stay in the shade of a scrubby pine tree, though. He didn't want the sun to reflect off the glass and maybe warn the townspeople that somebody was watching them.
Have they started building the gallows?
Jeffries was sitting below the top of the hill with his back propped against another pine tree. His legs were stretched out in front of him, with the ankles crossed casually.
Nope, no gallows. I thought they would have started by now.
Maybe they're just gonna hang Joshua from a cottonwood limb or something like that.
They ain't gonna hang him at all. We see anything like that fixing to happen, we'll be down there on top of those townies before they know what's going on.
They had been unsuccessful at finding anyone else they could force to go into the settlement and spy for them. Garth had made the same mistake Shade had made before him. He had gotten rid of prisoners when they might have still been of some use to him. But brooding over that misjudgment wouldn't do any good. All they could do now was wait to see what happened, and hope that they got a chance to free Shade before it was too late. The rest of the men, except for Gonzalez, had gathered at the bottom of the hill to wait for Garth's orders. They were playing cards, checking over their guns, or just sitting on rocks and logs. Gonzalez had ridden off a short time earlier to check on some dust he had seen rising in the distance to the northeast. Garth had agreed when Gonzalez told him he wanted to go have a look.
What the hell?
A commotion started down the hill among the other men. Garth moved back so that he would be below the level of the hilltop before he stood up and turned to see what was going on. Up a draw that led to the bottom of the hill, a covered wagon trundled along. Gonzalez rode beside the wagon, his gun out and covering the man at the reins. A grin creased Garth's rugged face. A woman with a baby in her arms sat beside the driver of the wagon. Gonzalez had found them another spy, a man who would be willing to do anything they asked in an effort to save the lives of his wife and child.
That Mexican's got a nose for trouble.
Yeah, and now we got somebody to go into Arrowhead and find out what's going on down there.
The two outlaws strode down the hill to join the others. The wagon had come to a stop by the time they got there. The outlaws crowded around it, leering at the young woman on the seat, who was quite pretty and had blonde curls peeping out from under her sunbonnet. She probably would have been even prettier had she not been so pale and frightened-looking.
Look what I found, Garth. These pilgrims were bound for Arrowhead. Gotta make a fresh start for themselves, see?
Garth studied the face of the young sodbuster, who was as scared as his wife, but also had anger lurking in his eyes.
Forget about trying anything funny, mister. You wouldn't have a chance. And then there's no telling what might happen to that wife and youngin' of yours.
What do you want? We don't have any money, if that's what you're after. It took all we had to outfit for the trip west. But if there's anything in the wagon you want, it's yours if you'll just let us go.
You'll be going, all right. Right on to Arrowhead, in fact. But you'll be going alone, and on one of our horses, not in this wagon.
Why shouldn't he take the wagon? As long as we keep the Senora and the Nino here, he got to come back.
People might notice a fella driving into town in a wagon and then leaving a little while later. But the town's crowded today. They won't pay no attention to a man on horseback who wanders in for a while and wanders back out again.
That's a good point. I think you're getting smarter, Willard.
Garth reached up, grabbed the pilgrim by the shirt, and jerked him off the wagon seat.
You listen to me and listen close. I'm gonna tell you what to do, and if you do it, you and your family will be all right.
All right. Just tell me what you want and I'll do it. You don't have to hurt anybody.
Here's what we need you to find out.
A lot of people in town today.
Matt and Sam stood on the porch in front of the sheriff's office, their Winchesters canted over their shoulders.
You know how it is in these frontier settlements. Anything that breaks the monotony is a big deal. The trial of the most notorious outlaw in the territory is bound to attract a great deal of attention.
Yeah, and a hanging will attract even more wherever they do it. Everybody in the territory wants to see Joshua Shade get what's coming to him.
Sam knew that was true. Public hangings were like holidays in most frontier towns. People would come from miles around. Kids would run around and play, shouting and laughing. If Arrowhead had a band, it would probably play a few rousing patriotic songs. There might even be a speech or two before the main event. Flag came up to the Blood Brothers and gave them a friendly nod.
Been down to town hall making sure there'll be enough chairs for everybody. Of course there won't be, the way folks will pack in there. But at least there'll be places for the judge and the lawyers and the defendant to sit.
You actually found a lawyer to represent Shade?
Yeah, old Colonel Wilmont said he'd do it. I don't know how he intends to defend a varmint like Shade, but that's his problem. My problem is I need somebody to ride out and meet the judge and make sure he gets into town all right. I got to worrying that Shade's bunch might try to stop him.
That would just postpone the trial. It wouldn't really change anything.
Yeah, but who knows how an outlaw thinks.
You want us to take care of that chore?
I was thinking you might. Randy and me and my other deputy can hold down the fort here. I got half a dozen other volunteers who'd be glad to pitch in if I needed them, too. I don't reckon we're gonna have any trouble here, though. Stan Hightower's passed the word to all the other ranchers in the area to let the trial go on as planned, and Mayor Wiley's done the same thing here in town. We may have a few hombres getting drunk to celebrate what's going to happen to Shade, but I reckon that'll be about all.
All right. After the last few days, it'll feel good to get out and move around some, won't it, Sam?
I'm sure our horses will appreciate the opportunity to stretch their legs.
Flag told them which trail the judge would be coming in on. They headed for the livery stable and saddled up their horses. Since they didn't know exactly how far out of town they would have to ride to meet the judge, they filled their canteens and took some biscuits left over from breakfast to tide them over in the middle of the day, if necessary. The horses were skittish and high-spirited from being cooped up, as Sam had predicted. He and Matt felt pretty much the same way. As soon as they were well clear of town, they put the animals into a hard gallop to ease some of that tension. After a half a mile, the Blood Brothers reined their mounts back to a slower pace.
Now, I don't know about you, but I feel a mite better.
So do I. I'll feel even better, though, when this is all over.
We heading on out to California like we talked about?
I suppose so. It's been a while since we were there.
Lots of pretty girls in California. I'm not sure any of them are any prettier than Miss Amelia, though.
I haven't even seen Amelia in almost a week. We've been too busy guarding Shade.
Well, there's a good reason to pay a visit to the 10 grand a night, don't you think?
We'll see.
They were headed south by southwest, following the main trail from Arrowhead to Tucson. The judge would be traveling by buggy, Flag had told them, so they were on the lookout for such a vehicle as the mountains fell into the distance behind them and they rode through rolling hills dotted with scrub brush and sparsely grassed. Around mid-morning, they spotted some dust rising in the distance ahead of them.
You reckon that's him? Whoever it is looks like they're moving along at a good clip.
Could be.
Gunshots!
I'm afraid you're right. Yeah!
As Matt and Sam leaned forward in their saddles, they spotted a buggy bouncing and careening along the trail toward them, being drawn by a pair of black horses. About 50 yards behind the buggy and rapidly closing the gap were four men on horseback. Smoke plumed from the guns in their hands as they fired after the fleeing vehicle.
That must be the judge!
And I'll bet those are some of Shade's men after him!
They shucked their Winchesters as they raced closer. Splitting up, Matt galloped down the left side of the road, Sam the right. As soon as they had swung out far enough so that they could fire past the buggy without any danger of hitting its occupant, they brought the rifles to their shoulders. The pursuers tried to peel off from the chase, but they were too late. Matt's rifle was the first to find its target. Another man slewed around under the impact of one of Sam's slugs, but he managed to stay mounted. The other two kept coming. Matt and Sam flashed past the buggy, which hadn't slowed down. Then all their attention was on the two men still trying to kill them. Guiding their horses with their knees, they angled toward the middle of the trail again. The dead man's right foot hung in the stirrup. The running horse continued to drag him far off into the distance. The last of the would-be killers wheeled his horse around and tried to flee, giving up the fight. The turn was too sharp, though, and the horse lost its footing. Matt and Sam slowed their mounts and approached cautiously.
He's gotta be busted to pieces inside. We'd better check on the other varmints first.
Yeah, one of them got away.
No, he didn't.
Matt pointed and saw that the wounded man had ridden only a couple of hundred yards before finally toppling out of the saddle. He now lay motionless next to the trail, while his horse cropped grass nearby. It didn't take long to confirm that three of the men were dead. The only one still alive was the unlucky gent whose horse had rolled over on him. And he probably wouldn't be among the living for very long. Sam dismounted and knelt beside the man. Crimson worms of blood had crawled from the man's nose and mouth, and the grotesque, misshapen look of his body testified to how many bones were broken. His internal organs were probably crushed too, but somehow he managed to open his eyes and gaze imploringly up at Sam.
Help me!
I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you.
I'm dying!
More than likely. But if you want to blame somebody, blame the son of a bitch who got you into this mess, Joshua Shade.
Shade?
Aren't you part of Shade's gang? Weren't you trying to stop the judge from reaching Arrowhead?
I didn't know he was a judge. And I heard of Shade, but I never met him. My pods and I, we thought this old fellow looked like he might have money. We figured to rob him.
Sam's frown deepened as he studied the dying man's face. The hombre wasn't much more than 20 years old, if that. The other three had been young, too, and the ragged trail of clothes they wore made them look more like down-on-their-luck cowboys than hardened desperados.
Matt, I don't think they're part of Shade's bunch. This was just a holdup we came along and interrupted.
We never meant to hurt anybody. Just tried to scare the old man, make him stop.
Well, what do you know about that? Just some would-be owl hoots with the bad luck to pick the judge as their first victim.
If that was the judge in the buggy.
We can ask him. Here he comes.
Sam turned to look and saw the buggy rolling toward them. His attention was drawn back to the man beside him by a gasped plea.
Water. Can I have some water?
Sure.
Don't bother.
It wouldn't hurt anything to give him a drink.
No, I mean, don't bother. It's too late.
Sam looked again and saw the injured man's eyes glazing over in death. He shrugged and left the canteen where it was.
Are all the brigands dead?
Yes, sir, they are. Would you be the judge who's going to Arrowhead to preside over the trial of Joshua Shade?
I am. Judge Julius Stanfield at your service, young man. I am very fortunate that you and your friend came along just as those highwaymen jumped me.
Nothing lucky about it, Your Honor. The sheriff in Arrowhead sent us out to meet you and escort you to the settlement. My name is Matt Bodine. This other fellow here is Sam Two Wolves.
Bodine and Two Wolves, eh? I've heard of you. Always wondered if you two young hellions might appear before me in court someday.
Not us, Judge.
Yes, I can see that. Again, my thanks.
The judge pointed a gnarled finger at the dead hombre.
Did that man and his companions have any connection to Joshua Shade?
That's what we figured at first, too. But he claimed they were just trying to rob you. And since he knew he was dying, I don't see what reason he would have to lie about it.
Indeed. What are we going to do with the bodies?
Round up their horses and tie them over the saddles so we can take them back to Arrowhead, I reckon. Either that or leave them for the buzzards and the wolves.
I think not. Even miscreants such as these deserve proper burials.
Yeah. Let's get busy, Sam.
Within 10 minutes, they had the four dead men strapped onto their saddles. Matt and Sam each led two of the horses with their grisly burdens as they followed the buggy toward Arrowhead.
Miscreants. You and the judge ought to get along just fine, Sam. You talk the same language.
That of a well-educated man, you mean?
No. I figure his honor there savvy Cheyenne, too. Of course I meant he went to college, too.
You're not as uneducated as you'd like to make out, Bodine.
Maybe not, but you'd never catch me at some faculty tea party.
Not that you'd ever be invited to such a gathering.
Thank the good Lord for that.
They continued bantering as they rode along, but that didn't keep them from watching the landscape around them with keen, alert eyes. They weren't out of danger yet, and they knew it. In fact, the threat of Joshua Shade still hung over Arizona territory, and it would continue to do so until Shade himself dangled at the end of a hang rope. It was just about the noon hour when Matt and Sam rode back into Arrowhead behind Judge Stanfield's buggy. Matt eased his horse up alongside the vehicle and pointed out the squat stone jail.
That's where Shade is.
I'll see Shade soon enough. Where's the courthouse?
Well, there's not one. Sheriff Flagg was figuring that you hold court in the town hall, which is right down yonder.
All right. Let's have a look. I'll see if it's suitable.
As they drew up in front of the town hall, the commotion that was growing in the street because of the judge's arrival and the dead man on the horses being led by Matt and Sam, brought Flagg hurrying from the jail.
Howdy, Judge. I'm Sheriff Cyrus Flagg. I don't think we've met.
No, I've only recently been assigned to this circuit. Let's have a look inside, shall we?
Flagg hung back as Stanfield strode on into the building.
What the hell happened? Are those some of Shade's men?
Nope, just some young saddle tramps who decided to turn owl hoot.
It was an unfortunate decision for them.
They tried to hold up the judge just as you boys came along and met him?
That's right.
Trouble's like a bunch of rocks rolling downhill. Once it starts, it just keeps picking up steam.
Flagg went on into the town hall after Judge Stanfield, and Matt and Sam took the bodies to Cassius Doolittle's undertaking parlor. The undertaker was a round-faced man with thinning brown hair and a jolly smile.
My business sure has increased since you fellas hit town.
It's not our doing. Well, I guess in a way it is. But we haven't gone looking for any of this trouble.
Actually, we did. Remember how we stuck our heads out of those windows in the hotel when we heard something odd on the roof?
Yeah, well, but it's a good thing we did.
No doubt about that. The citizens of Arrowhead are lucky to have you two around right now.
They stabled their horses and returned to the town hall just as Flagg and Judge Stanfield were emerging from the building. Stanfield declared that the hall would be satisfactory for the trial.
We'll begin the proceedings at 1 o'clock. Is that all right with you, Sheriff?
Whenever you want to commence trying that skunk face is fine with me, Your Honor. The sooner he's convicted and out of my jail, the better.
There's such a thing as presumption of innocence in this country, you know.
Well, no offense, Your Honor. But if you'd been here the night Shade and his bunch raided the town and saw all the suffering they caused, you wouldn't presume anything except that he's a low-down rattlesnake in human form.
I'd also like to clean up a bit, if someone will point me toward the hotel.
Right down here, Your Honor. Matt and I will escort you.
Why would I need an escort here in town? Surely I'm in no danger here.
You wouldn't think so, but there's a heap of folks in town today because words got around about the trial. Some of them are strangers to me, and we can't be sure that none of them are part of Shade's gang.
Very well. In that case, I'll be glad for you and Mr. Bodine to accompany me, Mr. Two Wolves.
They started toward the hotel, with Matt and Sam being as watchful here on the main street of Arrowhead as they had been out on the trail. In a situation this volatile, there was no telling when or where danger could strike, so the Blood Brothers wanted to be ready in case it did. Both of them noticed the weary-looking man on horseback plodding slowly down the street, but he wasn't even armed, so they didn't even pay much attention to him. From the looks of him, he was no threat at all. Ike Winslow saw the two men striding along the street, flanking a distinguished-looking gent with a beard, and wondered if they were Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. The outlaw called Garth had told him about Bodine and Two Wolves. They were gunfighters who had aligned themselves with the townspeople and were helping to bring Joshua Shade to justice. From what Ike had seen of Shade's gang, the man probably deserved hanging. Anyone who could lead such a group of brutal hard cases had to be even worse himself. A shudder went through Ike as he thought about his wife Maggie and son Caleb being in the hands of those varmints right this minute. All he could do to help them was follow the orders Garth had given him and hope to heaven that they weren't being mistreated. Ike had never felt more helpless in his life than when that bandit Gonzalez had charged up out of an arroyo and stuck a gun in his face. He hadn't even had time to reach for the old single-shot rifle behind the wagon seat. Gonzalez had ordered Maggie to take it out and cast it aside, then forced Ike to drive at gunpoint toward the place where all the other outlaws were gathered. His fear had grown even stronger as he saw those rough, ruthless men crowding in around the wagon and leering at Maggie. Working on the farm they had lost back in Ohio had toughened Ike's muscles, but even so, he knew he was no match for even one of those men, let alone 25 or 30 of them. They could do whatever they wanted to, and he couldn't stop them. They hadn't molested Maggie while he was still there, however, and so he clung to a shred of hope that they would leave her alone if he did as he was told. They had given him a horse, told him to ride on into Arrowhead as if he were just a saddle tramp. Then, when he had found out what the situation was with their boss, Joshua Shade, he was to drift out of town again, making sure that no one noticed him leaving. Garth had promised that as soon as he returned, they would let him and Maggie and Caleb go on their way. Pike didn't really believe him, but he had to hope that Garth was telling the truth. If things were similar here to the way they were back in Ohio, the best place in town to hear all the gossip would be one of the saloons. He reined the horse to a halt in front of the biggest one he saw, a place called the Ten Grand. With his pulse pounding in his head, he dismounted, looped the reins around the hitch rail, and went inside. The saloon was crowded, with men lining the bar and occupying most of the tables. Young women with painted faces and gaudy low-cut dresses circulated among them, delivering drinks and bawdy comments. Ike paused just inside the batwings and took a deep breath of the boozy air that was also scented with sawdust, tobacco, and human sweat. He steeled himself and made his way to the bar, finding a place among the men crowded there. He ordered a beer from the jolly-looking bartender who greeted him.
Town's booming today, looks like.
Well, of course it is. Joshua Shade's going on trial today. This is the biggest day in Arrowhead's history, my friend.
Joshua Shade?
You never heard of Joshua Shade? He's the worst outlaw in these parts. The worst in the whole territory.
I've, been up to Colorado for a while. Just rode down this way to look for work.
In that case, I reckon it was just luck that brought you here on the big day, friend. Stick around for the festivities.
Festivities? Is this fella Shade gonna be hanged after the trial?
Well, you're assuming that he's gonna be found guilty, which of course he is, but I don't think the hanging's gonna be here. There's talk that Shade will be taken somewhere else for the sentence to be carried out. But we'll be celebrating anyways, just knowing he's gonna get what's coming to him.
That was news to Ike, so it would be to Garth and the other outlaws too. And probably welcome news, because it would mean they would have more time and opportunity to rescue Shade before his neck was stretched. Ike was certain that was what they planned to do, even though they hadn't said as much while he was around. To be sure what was going on, he would have to stay in town longer. If he went back now, he couldn't tell the outlaws anything that they didn't already suspect. So even though he hated the idea of leaving Maggie and Caleb alone with those bastards any longer than he had to, he didn't have much choice.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, thanks. I'm fine.
It was probably the biggest lie he had ever told in his life. Matt and Sam came into the sheriff's office and nodded to Randy Johnson, who had been left in charge at the jail.
We're supposed to take Shade over to the town hall for the trial.
We'll go along with you.
Randy was referring to himself and the two other guards who were posted just outside the building. Matt got the keys from the nail on the wall, unlocked the cell block door, and then swung the door open.
And the Lord saith, cast
with their rifles at the ready, Matt and Sam went into the corridor
fire
between the cells.
Brimstone.
Johnson stood just outside the door with a shotgun in his hands. Matt unlocked the door of Shade's cell and stepped back quickly, leveling the Winchester at the door.
Come on out of there, Shade.
Damn you, you foul demon blasted heathen! Your mother was Satan's whore, and you are the bastard child of that unholy union!
Matt reached out with the rifle and used its barrel to shove the door open.
Come on out, or we'll have to come in and get you, and we won't be gentle about it.
Yeah!
Shade came toward the door, raising his arms so that his claw-like hands were extended toward Matt and Sam, who kept their rifles trained on him. Shade's long hair was tangled and matted, as if he had been running his fingers through it constantly all the time he had been locked up in there. His eyes seemed to be sunken even deeper in their sockets, and they blazed with an unholy fire.
Randy, get those shackles and leg irons Sheriff Flag has in the cabinet.
At the mention of the restraints, Shade's head jerked up. He threw himself at Matt with a speed and ferocity that he hadn't seemed capable of a second earlier.
Nice one, Sam.
Johnson rushed in and snapped the shackles into place around Shade's wrists. Once those heavy cuffs with their 6-inch length of chain between them were secured, Johnson took the pair of leg irons that was draped over his shoulder and fastened them around Shade's ankles. The outlaw was slender enough so that the Blood Brothers were able to handle him without much trouble.
You reckon we better gag him before we take him out?
It might be a good idea. Otherwise, the ladies out there are going to hear things that they don't have any business hearing.
They took off their bandanas. Matt wadded his into a ball and shoved it into Shade's mouth, jerking his hand back as the outlaw tried to bite his fingers. Sam used his bandana to tie mats into place.
We'll have to buy new ones. I don't want that bandana back after it's been in the mouth of a hydrophobia skunk-like Shade.
Ask over at the general store. I'll bet the owner would replace him free of charge after everything you fellas have done to help the town.
With Shade gagged, shackled, and in leg irons, Matt and Sam led him out of the jail.